Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Kicking with Keor here on Full Press Radio, episode number 68. Technically, our show this week, our Bracket Palooza special, was episode 68, but we're going to go with the 68 this week since March Madness wasn't really an official Kicking with Keor episode. But thank you to all those who tuned in. We'll get to that in our second segment a little bit later. For those who took my picks, don't know what to tell you. We're going to get into, of course, the big upsets in March Madness. A 13 seed, a 14 seed, a 15 seed, all advanced. The brackets are going crazy. So much fun in this first weekend of March Madness as you get ready to watch these second round games beginning on Sunday afternoon. We're getting to that in the second block. We're going to start with a little NFL free agency since we didn't really get a chance to talk about that in the middle of the week because we recorded the Bracket Blues episode during the big free agent news. So we're going to try to encapsulate all that for you. Of course, we're going to get into what's going on with Deshaun Watson and that situation. We're going to talk about LeBron James' injury from Saturday, what kind of impact that could possibly have on the Lakers later on, Justin Thomas winning the Players' Championship. A lot going on in the world of sports, and we're less than 10 days away from the start of the baseball season. So remember, you'll get my picks probably next week's show because the season is April 1st. So we'll get a chance to talk about that then. I want to remind you, you can tweet me on Twitter, at RickNader555. It's at R-A-C-K-I, Nader, like in Terminator, 3-5s. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, at FP_coverage, at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Kicking with Keor, and you'll find it. Please give me some feedback. Tell me what you think. What do you like? What you don't like? You can email me, rickjkeor@gmail.com. And you can also download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. It has all of our articles, podcasts, live shows, which we'll tell you about a little bit later. But you need the app, especially if you miss any part of this show. You can always get the latest episode on the Full Press Coverage app. We'll tell you about our live lineup a little bit later. Hope you're all staying safe. Hope you're all wearing a mask as we try to get through this pandemic together. I actually get my second shot of the vaccine this week, so I'm a little bit excited about that. But that's just what's going on in life. Let's get into sports. Let's start with free agency. And I think overall NFL free agency is what it was supposed to be. I mean, even though teams didn't have as much money as in the past, and you saw the new TV deals this week where Amazon is now the exclusive home of Thursday Night Football, and ESPN and ABC are going to get Super Bowls again as part of the new deal. Eventually, you're going to see money go back up again. It's just fine. The NFL is feeling the costs of playing a season with limited fans or no fans in some places, and the money's just gone down, and that's going to happen. But you still had big money thrown around, and there were a lot of good deals I liked. And I'm going to start, of course, and we're going to be joined by Mike DeBate, who is one of the co-hosts of FPC Radio Live every weekday on Full Press Radio, also hosts Locked On Patriots, helps run Full Press Coverage Patriots website here. You're going to wonder what I think of the Patriots' moves. And we all know that Bill Belichick went in, and you heard Tommy Curran from NBC Sports Boston. You heard Louis Riddick from ESPN say throughout February the Patriots were going to be really aggressive this offseason. And everyone was trying to really think about, okay, does that mean they're getting a quarterback? And they bring back Cam Newton, we talked about in the last show. And I said it could not be the only move. Well, it still is for right now. But you look at what they did in free agency, and I don't think anybody expected this, where they bring in Jonnu Smith on a 4-year, $50 million deal. They bring in Hunter Henry on a 3-year, $37.5 million deal. And now you take Smith and Henry, and it's basically the Patriots' form of the latest incarnation of trying to rebuild the Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez connection. Where now I give whoever the quarterback is two really good tight ends. And Jonnu Smith's going to only turn 26 this season. Hunter Henry right now is only 26. We tend to forget about that because he's had some injuries throughout his career. But now with those two together, you've now given whoever the quarterback is in Foxborough an intermediate route on option on third down that they didn't have before. Where last year with the Patriots, 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9 became sort of passing downs that were kind of predictable. You now have many different routes you could go. And the Patriots, I thought, made some other good moves with their wide receiving core. They brought in Kendrick Bourne, only paying him, I think, $5 million guaranteed. He could be a kick return, punt return kind of guy. And at the same time work underneath. They bring in Nelson Aguilar on a 2-year deal. I know people hated that deal. 2 years, $26 million. It's like $11 million guaranteed. And he's a guy that with Derek Carr had a good season last year. Was a good deep threat. We know his drop history. But, again, he's only 27. So I think the Patriots, while they don't have that true number one, added, I think, a couple of good connections. And what I really like what they did, Matt Judon at linebacker, getting him from the Ravens was an absolute steal. I mean, that's a guy that could create havoc as a pass rusher. And you put him with Josh Uche and Chase Winovich, you've got a really good young pass rushing core there from New England. You bring in Jalen Mills at safety now that Pat Chung is retired. And really what I liked is their offensive line, where they bring in Trent Brown via trade from the Raiders. Raiders traded away a bunch of their offensive line, which was really confusing about what they did. But they bring in Brown, who's had good history with New England before. Remember, he had a good year with New England before the Raiders gave him that big payday. You bring in Ted Karras. When they signed Ted Karras at center to the 1-year, $4 million deal, and Karras used to be in New England before, everybody thought that's the end of David Andrews in Foxborough. And Andrews has been a really key part to the offensive line. They missed him in 2019 when he missed the whole season. And it turns out David Andrews decided to come back. It was like a 4-year deal, $19 million. Took less money to come back because he loves playing in New England. So for the Patriots to basically have one of the better offensive lines in football despite losing Joe Tooney to the Chiefs, which, by the way, good job by Kansas City. They lose Eric Fisher. They lose Mitchell Schwartz. They release those guys because of cap issues. And they get Tooney on a 5-year, $80 million deal. They get Kyle Long out of retirement. And that's going to help their offensive line. We don't know what the Chiefs are, but I love that deal. But for New England, whoever the quarterback is, they've almost given Cam, if it is Cam Newton or a rookie, they've given that quarterback many options they did not have a year ago. Could they still use another breakout wide receiver? Yeah, sure. Could they maybe look to add a running back with Sony Michel in the last year of his deal? Possibly. There are many different routes they could go. But at the very least, I'm not saying the Patriots are the AFC's favorites. I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl team, because they're not. I get it. It's about the quarterback. But at the same time, they have proven to be competitive. It's going to be a much better team than what they were a year ago at 7-9, when somehow Bill Belichick got 7 wins out of that roster. It should be a 9-win team, maybe 10 with this roster they have now. Because you would think Cam a year later would understand the offense. I'm not saying he's going to be great. He would be better than he was this past year. And now that the Patriots have addressed all these needs in free agency, you now have an opportunity with your picks, and they got an extra fourth-round pick, as Mike DeBate will tell us about later. And they traded with the Texans, gave Marcus Cannon to the Texans, and moved up in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds, where you can now take some of those picks and try to maybe trade up. You can maybe take Gilmore and maybe try to trade him to get some capital and move up. The Patriots maybe can now, with the needs that they've addressed, focus on trying to be aggressive in the draft and get up into that top 10 and get a quarterback that can be groomed by, that can be sort of developed and go at a slow pace while Cam starts. So it gives Bill Belichick, the GM, more options. And I will say this. People are going to say, oh, teams that spend big never win. You shouldn't really spend big in free agency. And that part is true in most cases. I will say this, though, for the Patriots. While it does show that, yes, Bill Belichick's had some bad drafts in the last couple of years, and I can admit that easier than more than most, it does say that you look at the deals, and the Patriots have made these deals where it's going to be when the money goes up in the NFL, these deals will not look as lopsided. And they didn't really use a lot of cap space for this season to land all these guys. That when those deals are backloaded, they'll still have room on the cap. So they think they played it smart by backloading a lot of these deals to get the players they needed. They had over $60 million in space. You have to use a lot of that space. I think it's like a certain percentage you can only roll over. So Bill Belichick kind of had to be aggressive in a way, but I don't think anybody saw this coming. Not even close. And give him credit for actually spending the money, because a lot of people didn't think the Patriots would do it. They've had a history of not doing it. And you normally think that when Stephon Gilmore signed, everybody was so shocked. And it paid off. I'll give you a couple other winners so far. Again, it's still pretty early. We still have a lot of good options on the board. I like what the Niners did. Bring in Trent Williams, 6-year deal, $138 million. He's going to definitely help that left side of the offensive line. You add him with Alex Mack at center. Now, again, who's the quarterback in San Francisco? Is it Jimmy Garoppolo? Do they trade for Sam Darnold? Do they somehow still get involved with Deshaun Watson? We'll see. But at the very least, San Francisco's helped that offensive line. You got to love what they did. I really like what Washington did. You bring back Brandon Scherff from the franchise tag. That helps your offensive line. You bring in Will Jackson, former corner of the Bengals. That'll help your defense. But I really like what they did on offense. They bring in Curtis Samuel, wide receiver, a guy who Ron Rivera is very familiar with from his time in Carolina as the head coach, to help Terry McLaurin, help Logan Thomas. They add to that pass-catching group with the football team. But they also brought in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, you could make the argument, yes, Fitzpatrick has a ceiling, where signing Fitzpatrick doesn't make the Washington football team the favorites to go to the Super Bowl. It doesn't. But if you're asking this team that can't get really a franchise quarterback this year, they're not going to trade for Darnold, and a team that picks about, was it, like 19th in the draft? A team inside the top, like right around the top 20. They can't take their draft capital and get up into the draft or get a Russell Wilson or somebody like that. It's not going to happen. So if that's not going to happen, you take the plan B. You take a guy in Fitzpatrick who wants to start, knows he did pretty well with the Dolphins where he deserves the chance to start. And even if Fitzpatrick struggles, you still have Taylor Heinicke in the mix who played well toward the end of the season last year. Where it's not about they're not going to rush Heinicke or even Kyle Allen back if Fitzpatrick struggles. But you kind of know what Fitzpatrick is. He's got a really good floor. And it's still a division in the NFC East where Dallas, despite bringing Keanu Neal at safety, you don't really know what their defense is. And Dax, we'll see what he is coming off the injury. The Giants, I like what they did with Kenny Galladay, but 4 years, that's a lot of money. I know only $40 million is guaranteed out of that $72 million, but it's a guy that didn't really play much a year ago. And he had the one great year in 2019. But besides that, you had 11 touchdowns that season. He had 10 combined the other 3 years. And when you see receivers like Juju Smith-Schuster only get 1 year, $8 million from the Steelers because he decides to not go to the Chiefs and go to, which I'm shocked. Why not take incentives and go play with Patrick Mahomes and say he stays to play with Ben Roethlisberger when the Steelers are cutting defensive players and losing defensive players? Surprising, but he only gets 1 year. Will Fuller only gets 1 year from the Dolphins. And I love that deal for Miami, especially if they get a receiver early in the draft. Look at that receiving core for Tua. That would be really impressive. But for Galladay to get 4 years, I was kind of surprised by that. I think it'll work out for the Giants. Again, I don't think it's a bad signing. I think it's just one I'm shocked they overpaid that much. But they kind of had to make that splash in free agency. It's something they hadn't really done, so you got to give them the credit for it. Another team going down the board, I like what Buffalo did, kind of keeping a couple of their own guys, Matt Milano, Darrell Williams. They did some good things there. So the Bills, while they didn't really make a big splash, they kept a lot of their own. They did bring in Mitchell Trubisky as that backup to Josh Allen, which now you give Trubisky kind of that new, like a change of scenery. Maybe he turns out to be okay. But even then, that's a question mark. There's still a lot of good free agents out there in the market. Like, you look right now, I think that I'm looking at CBS. The top free agent that is currently out there is Melvin Ingram. And I think I saw Ian Rappaport tweet earlier today that he was visiting with the Chiefs. So that would be really interesting if the Chiefs add another pass rusher to that mix. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on with the segment with Mike. In terms of losers in free agency, I really think the Bears, and there was the report by Adam Schefter that they tried to get Russell Wilson. It didn't work. They go out and sign Andy Dalton to a one-year deal, and it sounds like it's going to be Andy Dalton, the quarterback, barring something crazy. But the Bears basically admitted, look, we could not get a franchise quarterback, and they're picking low in the draft because they made the playoffs last year. And I can't blame Seattle for saying no, because if, let's say the Bears give 3 first-round picks, right? And even if they gave you 2 big-time players, because the Bears had to cut Kyle Fuller because of cap reasons, and Kyle Fuller signs with Denver. Those 3 first-round picks in the 20s, it does nothing good for Seattle because they can't move up to get a quarterback. Whatever team trades with Russell Wilson for the Seahawks or Deshaun Watson for the Texans in the future, if that does happen, has to be in a position where they have draft capital or something that allows Seattle and Houston to get their next quarterback. You're not going to be able to hand them Darnold or Tua. They're going to want to pick their own guy. So for the Bears, they say, oh, we'll give you 4 of these picks. You don't have the package to make it work, even if Russell Wilson wants to go there. You don't have it to pieces to make it work. So the Bears are kind of stuck in no man's land and have to kind of go with Dalton. That's a mistake. I think the Packers are a team that I'm shocked they haven't done more. They lose their center Corey Linsley to the Chargers. They do bring back Aaron Jones, which I liked, even though they would say, yes, you paid him a lot. 4 years, $48 million. I think it was like $13 million guaranteed. Well, got a little bit of a raise on what the cap, the franchise tag would have been. But Jones at least is an impact weapon in this offense. They still don't have a number 2 for Devontae Adams. And they should have been in on Fuller. They should have been in on Smith-Schuster. I don't know if they'd be in on Goddard. There's still a couple good wide receivers they can get. Guys like T.Y. Hilton, Sammy Watkins. There's still some good names that you can go out there and get on a good deal. But for Green Bay to really not look at the wide receiver position, I've been kind of surprised by that. So I think they've kind of... I won't say, I've kind of been in my disappointments in free agency. Not losers, because again, as much as we love the NFL, free agency, sometimes we kind of hone it into the first 2 days. And most of it is, but there are some deals that get done a little bit later in the process that you tend to respect. And you tend to like what they do. I thought Pat Peterson going to the Vikings was pretty interesting on a 1-year deal. I think that might be a good job. And Jameis Winston going back to the Saints. I do think he's their quarterback of the future because I don't believe that Taysom Hill can be the quarterback of the future. I think Sean Payton would not be bringing back Jameis Winston again if he didn't think he could play. I was shocked he didn't play last year. And he had that good touchdown on the trick play in the divisional round. Why not see what Jameis can do as a quarterback? So it makes all the sense in the world. Now, we have to get into the Deshaun Watson situation, and it's very ongoing, so if you listen to the show, information might change and might differ from what's being talked about now. And basically what's going on, the Deshaun Watson situation, and again, very ongoing, he's the subject of a few civil suits that are accusing him of sexual assault. The lawyer, Tony Busby, I'm looking at the New York Times article that it gives all the information on it. Many as 15 women have had claims of sexual misconduct, coercive behavior against Watson. That's from the New York Times. And when I first heard this story, it was surprising because you tend to look at Deshaun Watson. He's going to be 26 in September. Do you think a lot of people appreciate his character and talk about how great of a person he is? You look at the situation and it kind of shows you, and again, we don't know what's going on. It's this whole process has to play out. You also don't know what goes on behind the scenes. We don't from anybody. And it was reported Saturday night by Mike Florio, a Pro Football Talk. Tony Busby, the attorney, said on social media that his team will be submitting affidavits and evidence from several women who had experiences with Deshaun Watson to the Houston Police Department and the district attorney on Monday, and they'll request for the grand jury. That's to kind of see if there's going to be criminal charges involved in this case. Now, what I saw in the New York Post was TMZ reported, actually, on Saturday. Watson is adamant he didn't sexually assault any women who filed the lawsuits, and Watts from the New York Post. Watts inside told TMZ that he only contacted the women via social media because his regular masseuse was unavailable due to the pandemic. You had Watson's agent, David Mulligetta, tweet on Friday, "Sexual assault is real. Victims should be heard. Offenders prosecuted. Individuals fabricate stories in pursuit of financial gain often. Their victims should be heard, and those offenders also prosecuted. I simply hope we keep the same energy with the truth." Again, we're going to see how this process plays out. And it's going to be really interesting. Because you tend to think when this story broke, it was like, okay, what's going to happen is you hear more and more women coming out and accusing Watson of this. It becomes a bigger deal. And you look at everything going on in this situation. If Watson is adamant that he didn't do this, then yeah, you got to fight this. And you hope he didn't do any of this. But you wonder now, if you're the Texans, can you trade him at this point? And if you want, I don't think the Texans want to trade him. They did go out and sign Tyrod Taylor. They traded for Ryan Finley. They still don't have their next franchise quarterback if they trade Watson. Doesn't matter where Deshaun Watson wants to go. And if you're a team right now, do you want to take on what might be going on with him? I know we look at the NFL sometimes and see talent sometimes can cancel out what's going on off the field. We've seen it in many instances where guys get second chances and things like that. And if Watson has done these things, the NFL is looking into it, he's probably going to get suspended. But a team might wait that out because they know eventually they're going to get a guy who's in his prime at quarterback and that can win games. Sad reality. If he did these things, and again, we keep using the word if, because we hope he didn't do any of this. And this process is still very much ongoing, but it's a real, if he did do this, a real sad situation to say the least. And it's a situation going to develop over time. Watson is represented by Rusty Hardin. If that's a name you sounds familiar to you, he did represent Roger Clemens in the perjury case many years back. That Roger Clemens was found not guilty of. The story is only going to change day in, day out. And it's still going to be interesting to see that. I think really when you look for the Texans, the deadline for them is the draft. From a football perspective, that's where the Texans have to, if they don't trade him by the draft, now it gets to be a really fishy situation for Houston because they're not going to get as much back as they would if they dealt him before. So, both sides here, I think Deshaun Watson's stuck, and I think the Texans are stuck. But I heard Michael K kind of talk about this on the Michael K show this week. Like, every team has a massage therapist. And even if you say, oh, with the pandemic, I got to find these other massage therapists, why can't the team massage therapist come in and give you a massage if you needed one? At the very least, Watson, you would think could have been a little smarter here. If he didn't do any of these sexual assault allegations, at the very least, you'd be smarter. You hope he didn't do any of this. But the process has to play out. So we'll try to keep you updated on the show as best we can. Not an easy situation to talk about by any means. And we hope in this day and age of Me Too, you gotta get an opportunity to come forward if this did happen to them. Real serious situation going on in Houston right now. So coming up next, I'll be joined by Mike DeBate, who one of our co-hosts here at FPC Radio Live with Ian Glendon. You can hear him every morning on the network. We talk Patriots because that's the team he mainly covers on Locked On Patriots, and here at FPC with the FPC Patriots. Winners and losers in free agency, what happens with Cam Newton, the whole nine yards. We have some fun with it here on the show. And then we'll do our NCAA tournament segment, which we'll not only talk about the on-the-court basketball, but the mistakes the NCAA continues to make. Oh, boy. Plus, I'll tell you more about my busted brackets, which you'll enjoy. So that'll be coming up next, my interview with Mike DeBate. You're listening to Kicking with Keel. We're here on Full Press Radio. We will be right back.
It's been March Madness, not only in college basketball, but in the NFL. This week, free agency and the league year got underway, and, well, I think the Patriots got the memo that, hey, you're allowed to spend money. And joining us to talk about all things Patriots and the NFL free agent period is a man of many places, the managing editor of Full Press Coverage Patriots, host Locked On Patriots, co-host FPC Live, which we hear every weekday on FullPressCoverage.com, the FPC radio app, with Ian Glendon. Please welcome back Mike DeBate to the show. Mike, how you doing today?
Ricky, always a pleasure to join you on the microphone. Thanks so much for inviting me today. Doing well, my friend. A busy week in the NFL, without question. A really busy week in Foxborough.
So we heard in the early portion of the offseason, like February, from people like Tommy Curran, who covers the Pats on NBC Sports Boston, from ESPN's Lewis Riddick, Bill Belichick was going to be as aggressive as ever in the offseason. I don't think people really understood what that meant. I think they kept thinking quarterback, and we'll get into that. But I think those two are probably patting themselves on the back a lot and saying, yeah, I think we kind of knew something like this would happen, but I don't think anybody expected what the Patriots' shopping spending spree has been over the last week or so.
No, I don't think so at all. I think a lot of people will tell you, oh, yeah, we expected aggression, we expected this, we expected that, but the aggression with which Bill Belichick attacked this offseason was the likes of which we haven't seen up here in Foxborough in quite a while. It just seemed like every single time you were ready to think that, oh, well, the Patriots are done, you can put down your phone, all of a sudden you get another notification that they're signing one more free agent. And look, for all of the talk about the money that the Patriots spent in free agency, and they spent a considerable amount, what they did was attack areas of need, and they brought in players that I believe fit their system and the way they play the game on the field very well. So right now, I'm very impressed with the moves that the Patriots made in the offseason. This wasn't just a spending spree. It wasn't just done to win the offseason. I've seen a lot of that thrown around by local and national media, kind of taking delight at poking fun of Bill Belichick and saying, well, nobody ever won the offseason and then went on to win the Super Bowl. That's not what the Patriots were trying to do. They were trying to rebuild, restock their roster with the best players they could get, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I think people look at the criticisms for the Patriots and say, oh, you spent too much money, this and that. They're actually really smart here, because a lot of these teams have little to no cap, and when all this money comes in from these new TV deals and they've backloaded these contracts to the point where there's not really a significant cap hit on anybody this year so far, they're going to be, their contracts are going to look really good compared to other teams are going to have to spend, because now the players know there's more TV money.
Absolutely. And the Patriots did. They struck while the iron is hot right up at the opportune time. And this is not new for the Patriots to sign players to deals that look good on paper. The numbers seem a little elevated for some of the players, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit. But bottom line, they backloaded a lot of these contracts. And this is something that is very much the modus operandi of Bill Belichick. He backloads the contracts, doesn't take the significant cap hit right away, is able to build his team, has an eye on the present with a couple of sharp eyes on the future. And that really is what sets this apart, I think, from teams just going out and throwing money at veteran players. You see a lot of guaranteed money, a lot of things of that nature that's thrown around in other off seasons. The Patriots structured this very well. It's a lot of money when you look at the entire package, like I just said. But at the same time, when you look at the structure of each of these contracts, none of them are real albatrosses when it comes to the salary cap, especially for 2021.
So I think two of the biggest names that stole the headline is, hey, the Patriots have pass catchers at tight end again in Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of impact those two will have on, well, whoever the quarterback eventually is?
It's going to be a huge impact. First of all, the Patriots can finally run the 12-man personnel again that they loved to employ, especially when they had Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez in the lineup. But even beyond that, the Patriots had brought in good, solid tight ends that could run the 12-man alongside Gronk. Martellus Bennett comes to mind. Benjamin Watson, you know, coming back in for a little bit and being able to play that. The Patriots last year especially got zero production out of their tight end position. The rookies just simply couldn't round into form Edelman time. Ryan Izzo was being asked to carry the load of a tight end one, where really he's a two at best, maybe a third option most comfortably. So the Patriots knew they needed to upgrade that position, and they did it with the two best on the market. Jonnu Smith comes in, that prototypical move tight end, the guy that can be a huge threat in the red zone and will give you yards after the catch. That's something the Patriots did not get when it came to the tight end position last year. They got almost no production in the red zone and almost no production yards after the catch. Jonnu Smith solves both of those, and he's a very, very good blocker, something that he doesn't get enough credit for. Hunter Henry is someone that I've coveted for a while here in New England. Before I covered the Patriots, I covered the San Diego and then Los Angeles Chargers. And I watched Hunter evolve from the time that he joined them as a rookie right up until the present day and now signing a contract in New England. Hunter's more of a traditional inline tight end. He plays the role well. He's someone who has sure hands. He can run precision routes, and something that, again, the Patriots haven't had at the tight end position in quite some time. He'll get a lot of the Rob Gronkowski looks that Rob used to get. I'm not comparing the two because Rob was in a character of his own. He was in a league of his own. But Hunter Henry is very adept at that, and he's more that traditional Y tight end that will give the Patriots that shorthanded target that can, you know, run crossers, you know, be able to get open on the field and make things happen. Yards after the catch, that's going to go to Jonnu. And don't be a bit surprised to see the Patriots run a little bit of the pass option as well, the run-pass option, with Jonnu Smith maybe running the ball and getting the ball out of the backfield. That's something they did with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. I think that's something now that they can add to the game. And if, in fact, Cam Newton is going to be the quarterback and all signs look like they're pointing in that direction, Cam loved to utilize the tight ends, especially when he was in Carolina. This year, he's got two of the best to work with.
I think when you look at Smith and Henry, if you're going to play that Josh McDaniels intermediate-style offense, you now have two reliable catchers to get the ball to on a 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. You're not hoping for a deep bomb to Demir Byrd, or as good as Jacoby Myers is, you don't have to depend on him to constantly make every third down grab. So now at least you have receiving options to where 3rd and 9, 3rd and 8 isn't an automatic punt anymore.
Absolutely, without question. And it does. It gives you multiple options. If you need a 3rd and 7 or a 3rd and 8 and you want to extend the drive, you can run sets that allow Jonnu Smith to get in the open field, make that catch, and maybe extend it and get beyond and maybe get above and beyond a first down. If you need a catch at the spot of the ball or a spot at the catch, that's where you utilize Hunter Henry. So it gives you so many different options to be able to use. Again, the 12-man personnel is going to be run quite often in New England. The play-action scenarios that Josh McDaniels can scheme up this year really should have Patriots fans excited. They wanted offense. They're going to get offense because these two guys are going to provide it.
We could always talk about all these Patriots signings, but we would take 2 hours to do it. So let's do it this way. Your favorite signing the Patriots did this week besides the two tight ends was what?
I would probably have to say linebacker Matt Judon. Coming into this system, he really is the prototypical edge rusher that the Patriots always covet. He really comes in, shores up the linebacker position. I think it's a hand-in-glove fit. He can rush the passer within the Pats' defensive scheme. He can defend the run. He can set the edge. He can even drop back into coverage on the line as well. He's someone that can get after the quarterback, but he's also someone that can help stuff the run as well. So I love Matt Judon's addition to this defense. I think getting Dante Hightower back and some of the additions that they get there, Kyle Van Noy coming back in is huge as well. I really like the mentorship and the experience he has in the Patriots system coming back in and really defining the pass rush. But Matt Judon is that Swiss Army knife type of linebacker that the Patriots have been lacking the last couple of years. So that was really a favorite of mine as well. Another under the radar signing that didn't get so much press. If Judon is my favorite, I would say that this is like 1A as my favorite, and that's defensive lineman Henry Anderson coming over from the Jets. When you look at NFL Next Gen Stats, he posted the 3rd highest run stuff rate amongst players with at least 500 defensive snaps in 2020. His presence is going to help to bolster a Patriots defensive line that had its problems against the run in 2020. Anderson is also somebody that can provide assistance with rushing the passer as well. He wasn't really utilized in that role last year in New York, but in 2018, when he was called upon to be a little bit more of a threat in the pass rush, he had 7 sacks, 16 quarterback hits. So this is another guy, another Swiss Army knife type defensive linemen that can come in, play multiple roles. If you need him to slide in the middle of that defensive line, he can do it. He can even play outside on the edge. Versatility was a common theme among the Patriots signings this season, and those are two of my favorites other than the two tight ends.
Yeah, I'm loving that potential pass rush factor. Judon, Uche, Winovich, like that's a really good young explosive core, and I like bringing back the Annoy. I think for me, it's the offensive line. I mean, they stole David Andrews. Like, I think I want to go, like, report that they've stolen his contract, because after all the talk that it thought it was going to Miami, and then Miami doesn't get him or Ted Karras, thought he was going to Atlanta after they lose Alex Mack, doesn't go to Atlanta, and takes a significantly less than market deal to come back. And now you have Andrews and Karras for depth at center, and Karras could play some guard. You bring in Trent Brown, who's a former Patriot that did great in his year here. This offensive line is so much depth, and it could make Isaiah Wynn tradable and get some draft capital back, but all in all, they've given whoever the quarterback is very good offensive line for them.
Without question. And the offensive line, you can never have too much protection. You can never have too much help at that position. Ted Karras coming in at 1 year, $4 million is a great deal for him. It's a great deal for the Patriots. They're able to get someone who has experience in their system. Again, versatility, someone who can play along the line. He can play a guard position. He can play a tackle position. He can slot in and be the center. He did it and was the starting center for the entirety of 2019 while Andrews was on the shelf. For Andrews coming back, I agree with you, Ricky. I think this is an absolute steal for the Patriots. 4 years, $19 million, 6.5 of that guaranteed. You know, there's obviously going to be more available in playtime incentives, so that's something to factor in. But this proves to me that Andrews wanted to be back in New England all along. He didn't want to go anywhere. He was going out to see what the market would bear. But at the end of the day, it's hard for me to imagine that Miami wasn't even maybe a little bit more lucrative or at least equal to what he was getting. He definitely wanted back in New England, and I, for one, am thrilled that he's coming back, not just because of the prowess he provides on the field, but he's such a mentor to that offensive line. He's a mentor to the players that play alongside him. They all look up to him. He's very close to Cam Newton and the quarterbacks in that room, provides great protection. But again, it provides stability. Continuity along the offensive line is such an underrated part of a team that is put together to win and to sustain wins for a good amount of the season. The Patriots have that. They've got a lot of continuity on that line. They've got a great amount of size, and they've got players that can play in multiple positions. That's going to be a fun offensive line to watch this year, and it's going to provide whoever the quarterback is with a lot of protection.
How about quickly the Patriot free agent signing that made you go, huh?
I think a lot of people will look at this and say it was Nelson Agholor. You look at the 2 years that they provided to him, $13 million per, a total of about $26 million. It's likely that a lot of that is going to be incentive-based, and we've seen some of the details of that contract, that the Patriots' cap hit for this is not going to be all that extensive for 2021. I think it approaches around $7 million or so. In that regard, you're paying a lot of money for a player that has had his drop issues, whether it be in Philadelphia or whether it be in Las Vegas. But Nelson Agholor, at the same time, also fills a void that the Patriots didn't have last year. He's a vertical threat. He can get outside, he can get down the field, and he can make catches. He had a very good year last year in Las Vegas. That's one of the reasons why he was able to parlay that into a pretty good contract for this season. At the same time, he can also slot in and play the slot. A lot of people forget that most of the time that he was in Philadelphia, he played out of the slot. So he may be a little bit more of a versatile option than people are giving him credit for. That could be a head scratcher for some people, but other than that, I think the Patriots were very prudent, and I think they were very frugal when it came to dealing out these contracts. I don't see a whole lot of overspending by the New England Patriots when you look at the structure of the contract and the quality of the player that they're getting in return.
Yeah, especially when you look at the one-year deals a lot of these premier wide receivers are getting, it makes the Agholor contract look not that much worse compared to those that with the Fullers and Juju Smith-Schuster and things of that nature. Let's go over to quarterback. I heard the Cam Newton news last week, Mike, and I went, oh, no. And then I looked at the contract and was like, all right, if that's not the only option, I'm okay with it. Are you along those same lines? And I think that with all the moves they made in free agency, that they're not going to be picking at 15. I think they're moving up.
Yeah, I think so, Ricky. I think that a lot of people will believe that. And look, the inside, you know, the information that I've, you know, received, I have no inside information that tells me that that's exactly what they're going to do. But you look at the way the contract was structured, only $3.5 million of that guaranteed, most of it coming from incentives. It gives the Patriots a lot of wiggle room. It has 1 year mentorship written all over it. And I think that's what the Pats want to do. Look, they tried kicking the tires on Jimmy Garoppolo, on Derek Carr. They made calls to Las Vegas. They made calls to San Francisco to find out the quarterback market. So it wasn't a situation where Cam's return was just a foregone conclusion after the remainder of the season. I think they looked at the options that were available. I think they looked at what Cam can bring to the table. And obviously, negotiating back and forth with him and seeing a desire to come in and to prove everyone wrong could be the way that the Patriots choose to bet on this. I think Cam's the starter in 2021. I think they do either move up or, at the very worst, stand pat at 15. And I think that pick now becomes a quarterback. Before, when it looked like David Andrews was leaving New England, I was thinking that could be a pick that might be earmarked for an offensive lineman. Now, with the backlog they have at the offensive line, it's hard for me to believe that they'd prioritize any position other than quarterback at that point. There are a number of guys that could come in and be an understudy to Cam this year. I mean, you look at, you know, players obviously like Trey Lance and Justin Fields. You look at those guys and you say they would be the most ideal fit, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the hand in glove fit. Mac Jones could be someone that could come in here, learn a little more mobility from Cam, someone who's very adept at throwing the ball, but doesn't necessarily have the athleticism that some of the more modern quarterbacks have. So it could be interesting to see what the Pats do in the draft this year. Keep a sharp eye out for that in terms of clues as to how they might be thinking, but I completely agree with you. I think Cam's deal is very team-friendly. It allows the Patriots to seek other options at quarterback, which I fully believe that they will do. And at the end of the day, it also provides them with the flexibility to be able to draft the new quarterback coming in. To me, the spotlight's going to be on Cam. He has the weapons around him now. He has a full year of OTA, mini camps, things that he didn't have last year, and he has health. He has another year of good health under his belt. So all of the, I don't want to say excuses because that's not how I want to put it. I think Cam did the best he could last year with everything that was going on around him, but he doesn't have those built-in obstacles any longer that would impede him from being able to be the man on the field. This type of contract and Cam's willingness to sign it proves to me that he's betting on himself this year. And one thing I learned about Cam Newton in the year covering him is that if he believes in himself, he fully believes in himself. He's not going to give you fool's gold. He thinks he can be the man, and we'll see. We'll see what happens on the field. But I've got some faith in him this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, for lack of a better word, they have given him really no more excuses. They've given him the weapons. They've given him the time. They've given him the offensive line. They were looking at bringing in Chris Carson before he resigned. Maybe they bring in Leonard Fournette and another good running back into the mix. They really just don't. He doesn't really have that. Oh, this isn't working for me anymore. And the problem I think you have, I think they did the right thing in resigning him, in that they're not waiting for something to happen with Garoppolo. They're not waiting for something to happen with Mariota like they did last year, where they waited till April, May to get a quarterback. They at least had one in place. And the problem now, I think that you have, you kind of have to get above Carolina to get a quarterback. I don't think any quarterback can be there at 15. And if a certain quarterback in Houston, who's got his own things to worry about right now, but if he gets to Carolina, now you have to get ahead of Houston to get a quarterback. So that's where it's going to get really tricky to see, can this team actually get to maybe 7 or 8 in the draft from 15 to get a quarterback and to have the capital to get it.
Yeah, without any question. I think that's very astute, and I think that's a very good observation, Ricky. Look, bottom line, if the New England Patriots want to move up, it's not going to be easy for them to do so. They do have 10 draft picks. We found out yesterday that they will have an additional compensation pick at number 177. So now they've got the draft capital. The question is the draft capital enough this year into next year and beyond? You have to think that first rounders are going to be a part of that, maybe multiple first rounders to move up. And do the teams that they're going to be dealing with want NFL-ready talent? We're hearing that the Patriots are not actively shopping Stephon Gilmore out. does that change if they feel the need to move up and to draft their quarterback of the future? Now that the free agency dust is starting to settle, now you're really going to see the draft strategy come out. So for everyone thinking that the Patriots are going to be in a lull now until the draft, things are going to start to get really interesting over the course of the next couple of weeks. And we're going to find out a lot about what their future plans are. I think we found out what they're looking for 2021. Now it's going to be about building for the future. And how are they going to do it?
Let's go around the league. Give me one or two teams that you feel did the best in free agency.
Right now, I like the moves that the Giants have made, especially if they're able to bring in Kenny Golladay. I think that's a good option for them in making moves. The Arizona Cardinals obviously have upgraded at several positions. They've upgraded their offense, their defense. I've been impressed by what they've done so far. There are a few teams out there. Right now, the L.A. Chargers are kind of laying in the weeds right now. They're a team that really does get a very late start. So look for them to kind of be almost what the New England Patriots have been in the last few years. The team that lays in the weeds kind of like gets the opportunity to make some key signings and make some good, additions to that offense and on defense, building around a very solid quarterback in Justin Herbert. So those are the teams that I've liked a little bit. You look at the wide receiver market, that surprised me a little bit that guys aren't getting very high end contracts at that position, but the offensive linemen getting paid, no question about it. Kansas City impressed me. Really, I think attacking that offensive line problem that they knew they had. Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz were always solid for them, but bringing in Joe Tooney was a huge move for them. I've covered him for a number of years here in New England. And Tooney, again, another Swiss Army knife type player. He can play anywhere. If they want him to play left tackle and be the primary protector of Pat Mahomes, it's going to be, really, really interesting there. And I think they've got a good one to be able to do it. And if Kyle Long can start getting some of that Kyle Long magic back, all of a sudden, they've massively upgraded in really what may be the only area that they had a weakness in. So they were, again, impressive as well. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers keeping most of the band together, being able to keep their, their stout defenders, re-sign, bringing back in Chris Godwin. They're uploading and they're ready to roll for another year as well. So those are the teams that I've been impressed with so far.
And I get the sense that a former Patriot running back could be on his way to Tampa in the coming days or so. So they're going to add a couple more pieces in there. I like all the teams that you said. If I had to add one more, I'm going to give some love to the football team. They bring back Brandon Scherff from the franchise tag. Mm-hmm. They bring in Curtis Samuel, wide receiver, to help Terry McLaurin and Logan Thomas. And you add Ryan Fitzpatrick. And that, yes, that could be seen as your ceiling isn't as high, but in the NFC East, your ceiling doesn't have to be high. You just have to beat the Cowboys. And for Ryan Fitzpatrick to get a job where he can start, which I think is what he wanted all along, he wasn't going to go be a backup somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They've now given Fitzpatrick a lot of pieces to work with Gibson at running back, and Ron Rivera has the defense he wants. He's got a little bit better offense now because Fitzpatrick can do a little bit more things than Alex Smith can. You have Heinicke as your backup if it struggles. Right now, to me, they're the favorite in the East, even with Dallas bringing back Prescott.
Great point, and I like what Washington has done as well. I think Fitzpatrick is really the perfect guy. You want to talk again about a bridge quarterback. He is the perfect guy to bring in, and he can win you games, and he can win you quite a few. He's proven that in the stops that he's had, whether it be in Tampa Bay, whether it be in Miami, whether it be in Buffalo, New York. He's been a guy that can be relied upon to win you games when you need to win them. And you mentioned Ron Rivera's defense. That is the glue to the Washington football team right now. That's a stout team that can rush the passer, defend the run. That's right now an elite defense, in my opinion, in the NFC. So they're going to be interesting to watch this year. Dallas with Dak back now are going to be a much more formidable opponent, but I still think Washington has a good chance to give them all they can handle in that division and maybe even take it once again. So good point on them, and the addition of Samuel is big, especially with a new quarterback like Fitzpatrick coming in. You're going to want a good, reliable target with sure hands that can get open.
And also bringing in Will Jackson for that defense, so even more of an upgrade to help that team. How about a team right now? You're a little scratching your head that they haven't done enough or you haven't liked the moves they've made.
I can't really say that there's a team right now out there that has really been, you know, like scratching my head. I mean, yeah, I guess you could say the Las Vegas Raiders right now maybe have not targeted some of the areas that they need to. I think maybe they needed to make a couple of more moves along the offensive line. You know, I mean, getting a guy like John Brown as a speedster, he'll give, you know, Derek Carr, another option and another, you know, weapon down the field, but they had offensive line and protection problems last year. I really think that they needed to do a little bit of a better job than bringing in just what they have. So maybe there's still a little bit of, you know, hope out there. Maybe they're going to look to the draft, but that's a team that might make me scratch my head a little bit. But I haven't seen any team right now that I would say, wow, they're either blowing it with moves or they just haven't done anything that needs to be done. I think a lot of teams are taking a wait and see approach because cap space is so scarce throughout the league. The ones that have had the cap capital to invest have invested it, especially a team like New England. It seems like every team is kind of in slow motion compared to them right now, but I really haven't seen anyone that looks to me like they've been dragging their feet or that have made poor or really, really bad moves.
I'll give you two. There's a couple teams that came ahead. I think a close third is Pittsburgh because, yes, they brought back Juju Smith-Schuster, but the cost you've lost Mike Hilton, you've lost Bud Dupree, you're probably going to lose Steven Nelson. So you get an offensive piece back while losing a bunch of your defense. But the two I think have come to mind to me, Chicago, you can't blame them for trying to get Russell Wilson, but let's face it, you can't give them picks in the 20s and expect to take that deal for the next 3-4 years. And they're now having Andy Dalton at quarterback. So you, even though you lose Trubisky, Andy Dalton, Nick Foles isn't exactly a combo I'm buying season tickets for. And the Packers, I think, are 1-2. I like they brought back Aaron Jones, but at some point, Mike, Aaron Rodgers needs wide receivers. And I don't know if it's they don't like to draft wide receivers or they didn't go after Fuller when they thought people were going to get him at the deadline last year. They didn't get Galladay probably. They're not going to go get Smith-Schuster. They weren't even in the market for him. I mean, could they go after a guy like T.Y. Hilton or Sammy Watkins? We'll see, but they got to put some more pieces for Aaron Rodgers if you're going to try to win in the next 2-3 years for him. And I think the NFC North is really kind of lacking. Detroit's in rebuild. Yes, Minnesota, I did like they brought in Patrick Peterson. But the NFC North is leaving a lot to be desired.
Yeah, without question. And I think that's a good point. I'm glad that you brought up Green Bay. Their love affair or lack thereof, I really should say, with wide receivers is a little bit puzzling to me. I think they look at what they've got a lot of times and realize that, you know, we could be doing a lot worse. But surrounding Aaron Rodgers with maybe one more weapon might have been a smarter move. From what I'm hearing from Green Bay, they've actually been prioritizing defense a little bit more than offense, which is a little bit of a surprise to me. But I think they looked at what Tampa Bay could do to them last year and maybe thought that they needed some more help, maybe even in the defensive backfield. So keep an eye on that. I don't think Green Bay is done yet. You mentioned Chicago, obviously, you know. Being able to bring back Allen Robinson was probably a good move, but that's not a guarantee that he's going to be in Chicago next year. Signing the tender and signing the franchise tag only allows now him to be able to negotiate with the team and find out whether or not there's a trade market out there for him. So that's another thing that I would look at. They, you know, I think failed to bring in maybe one more weapon that they would need. Andy Dalton, I don't know if he's the answer there, so I'm glad that you mentioned them. I think that's someone to keep an eye on. Baltimore Ravens right now as well. I mean, I know they've thrown their hat into the ring when it comes to Kenny Galladay, at least at the time we're recording this podcast. Things can change so quickly. If they do get him, I mean, obviously that's a wide receiver that they've been coveting. But, you know, I think that there are a lot of, you know, players that they pursued that they weren't able to get as well. There's still some guys out there on the market. You know, Antonio Brown is out there, T.Y. Hilton, Sammy Watkins, guys that they've been linked to in the past. But right now, until they add another pass catcher, you have to kind of put them into that questionable mode as well.
So last one for you, Mike. Give me one free agent that's still out there, or you can give me two if you'd like, that you're interested, that is still on the market, that you're interested to see where he goes.
One of the guys that I'm really interested in, and I'm surprised is not, you know, off the board already, is Melvin Ingram. You know, the pass rush option that he provides and the ability that he provides to be able to change the complexity of a defense, I thought would have made him more of a target. Now, I know there's some injury history there, and I know technically people will look at it and say he's past his prime, but I watched him in Los Angeles, and I watched him evolve into one of the better, you know, players at his position. It was a little bit surprising to me that he wasn't claimed yet. So I look for him to kind of get scooped up. That's the one that surprises me. Kenny Golladay, obviously, I thought would have been off the board. I think a lot of people thought he would have been off the board very early on. But again, the wide receiver market, not as robust as a lot of people had believed. So there's still a lot that that happens, that's still to happen. But Ingram is one that I expected to be off the board by now simply because of the way he can change the complexity of a defense, especially at the edge.
Especially with the lack of significant edge rushers in the draft, at least in terms of guys that get picked really high. I mean, you think Ingram would get a fit. I mean, I'll go to the wide receiver market for one. I know he had a bad year last year with health, and I think people expected him to connect more with Phillip Rivers, but there's something about T.Y. Hilton that I like, as a guy that can go down the field and run some good routes on the intermediate side. I'm interested to see where he goes as kind of a prove-it kind of deal. I think he's more of the prove-it type of contract, but he has the veteran experience. He's in his 30s. I only get like a 1 to 2 year deal anyway, and he could be that missing piece on one of these teams, whether it's Baltimore, whether it's Green Bay, whether it's, I mean, if the market gets low, maybe New England brings in one more because they can't really draft wide receivers anyway. Let's go get another veteran wide receiver. I mean, there are so many ways I think T.Y. Hilton can help a contending team on a 1 year deal where he hasn't really, he's had a lot of the nagging hamstring stuff. But if he could stay healthy and find that connection that maybe because of the craziness last year he couldn't get from Phillip Rivers for some reason. But I think he still has, there's a lot of value if someone were to sign him.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, his days of being a solid number one are likely behind him for the reasons that you stated. I mean, there is injury history. He's lost a little bit of a step. He's a little older now. But a team that already has a solid wide receiver one is going to be a team that is very lucky to get T.Y. Hilton. I think there's still enough left in the tank for him to be viable. And I think that he still is going to be able to be a good, solid producer of receiving yards. And he can get the end zone. He's proven that. So I like that one as well. And I expect him, once Golladay comes off the board, I expect a lot of the dominoes here, especially at the wide receiver position, to start falling in place. And a lot of these guys to start getting signed, like Watkins, Brown, some of the guys that are still out there available on the market. I think a lot of teams are still waiting to see what Kenny's contract is going to look like. So good point on him. And I think he will be signed soon.
Especially because we saw Kansas City give Juju Smith-Schuster a call. Now you can imagine T.Y. with Patrick Mahomes.
Absolutely.
Give him another great weapon. He's got enough of those. But anyway, Mike, thanks again for hopping on. Tell us who's out there. Your many ways that you communicate with everybody every day with all your shows and articles you're doing, how they can follow everything, and how they can follow you on Twitter.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Ricky, thank you. It's been an honor to join you today. I really do appreciate it. You can find me each and every day on the Locked On Podcast Network, Monday through Friday on Locked On Patriots. We're continuing not just to break down the Patriots free agent moves, but we'll continue to break down the Patriots draft strategy and bring you the latest news, notes, and analysis from Foxborough. So definitely check us out on the Locked On Patriots podcast. Subscribe and download wherever you get your podcasts. And you can always follow me, all my written work, everything that I do on the Bird app. On Twitter at NDABATEFPC.
Be sure to follow all Mike's work. Keep him busy during free agency. Listen to FPC Radio Live every weekday with Mike and Ian Glendon. Great stuff. It helps get you ready for the day in sports. Mike, thanks for hopping on. We'll do this again soon. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Ricky. Always my pleasure.
A special thanks to Mike DeBate here from FPC Radio Live, Locked On Patriots, and all the great football work he does for hop on the show. We haven't had Mike on in a while. I thought he'd be great to talk about what's going on in the world of free agency. So many other signings we haven't gotten to. I'm sure we'll get to as we get closer to the draft. But it's just so crazy how the NFL free agent process continues to work. And again, Mike DeBate's part of our live weekday radio lineup that you hear on the Full Press Coverage website, fullpresscoverage.com, or on the app, FBC Radio Live with Ian Glenn and Mike Debate every morning at 8:30, I believe it is. Then Snowman in the Morning with Brian Snow, College Credit Hour with Memphis Spence, Dylan and Ross Save Sports. That's just our live shows. We got many other podcasts like the Full Press NFL podcast, which kept you updated on free agency this week. We have a baseball podcast, the hockey podcast. And if you see something we don't have, fullpresscoverage.com/contribute. You can be a part of our team if you fill out the application. We look forward to hearing from you and seeing what you how you can help us continue to grow as a website and as a network. So let's get into college basketball. March Madness is back. And there are times during this week where I said, I like March and I love it and it's so much fun, and then I hate it. I'll tell you why. And I kept going throughout the week that I wasn't very confident in my picks. And maybe I should have listened to myself when I'm not confident in them. But it's March. I'm never confident anyway, regardless of how much you know. And I don't pretend to be an expert, but I try to watch as much as I can. But I'll tell you when I'm wrong. I was wrong. And here's how bad my luck was. I went 23-9. On first-round picks in my main bracket. I did two brackets. I don't do 25, I did two. My backup bracket went 21-11. I still have all four Final Four teams left. My main bracket went 23-9. I lost two Final Four teams in the first round. So I could have been, if the two seeds that I lost in the Final Four had won, I would have been 25-7 and would have had a really good first round. Just the bad luck that happens. Now, the bad luck pales in comparison, to say the least, of what happened to VCU. We talked about throughout how the NCAA is going to be their test, and they haven't failed a test by any means of trying to play this NCAA tournament in Indiana amidst the global pandemic. But we had a sad thing happen on Saturday. The game between the 7-seed Oregon and the 10-seed VCU in the West region was a no contest because the VCU team had multiple positive COVID tests. They had I saw this from Matt Norlander, who does some really good work on CBS Sports, one of their main college basketball analysts. And I listened to the Eye on College Basketball podcast with Gary Parrish, does a good job with it. The issue with VCU was they had a first positive test on Wednesday, two more on Friday, and that prompted health officials in the NCAA that said VCU couldn't play. Now, the story from Norlander as well, VCU, St. Bonaventure, who played VCU in the A-10 title game, St. Bonaventure was out, by the way, they lost to LSU on Saturday, and A-10 title game refs all stay in the same Dayton hotel for the title game, along with the public, including many who weren't wearing masks. One ref is struggling mightily with the virus. And it's a sad situation because these kids who tried to play through the season, faced a lot of adversity, did all they can to play this year. And their season is over. Through no fault of their own. And I like what kind of how Mike Rhodes went about it. There's more into this, more this world, and this pales to what some people are going through with the virus and how we've lost so many people in this country to it. But your heart breaks for these kids. It really does. Because your season should go out playing the game. And you understand, for safety reasons, why they did not play. So Oregon gets a no contest. They'll move on. They'll play Iowa, and it'll be interesting to see if Oregon kind of shake off any rust. Remember, they lost the Pac-12 semifinal last Friday. So they're going to go 10 days almost without playing a game. So how that factors in with Oregon, we kind of saw how having to quarantine and waiting to play games can affect you in a sense. We saw it with Virginia on Saturday night, losing to Ohio, which I think a lot of people predicted. And Jason Preston, the star player for Ohio, had a really good game, 11 points, 13 rebounds, and 8 assists. Virginia, I thought, did everything they can. And I think if you're Tony Bennett's club, I know people are going to do jokes on Virginia because they lost another first-round game. And outside of the championship run 2 years ago, they have those now two first-round losses, one to UMBC and now one to Ohio. there's no shame if you're Virginia to lose this game. They basically, all they had this week was a shoot around 6 hours before the game. And they still almost won. That alone should give you a lot of credit. And Kansas, you saw, had their struggles with Eastern Washington. Kind of had to feel their way through the game, and eventually they got going, hit some big shots at Marcus Garrett. David McCormack eventually got into the game. Kansas survived. And I think Kansas will get better in the tournament because now they're getting back into that routine. Virginia doesn't get that chance to. So we're kind of seeing how the pandemic can still affect things. It's just a reminder, folks. It's still there. Even as we're getting the vaccine and stuff's going on, it doesn't go away. You can't just wish it not in existence anymore. But the big story in this tournament so far, a 13 seed, 14 seed, 15 seed, all move on. First time it's happened. Every seed won a game in the first round, but the 16. That's how crazy this tournament can get. And why we missed it so much over the last year. The two big upsets, we have to start, of course, on, we'll go in date order, and we'll start with Friday afternoon, Oral Roberts beating Ohio State 75-72. Kevin Obenor for Oral Roberts had 30 points. You had Asemus, I know it's Admus, but I think it's pronounced Asemus, 29 points, 5 boards, 3 assists in this ball game. So those two guys really were the big keys for Oral Roberts, who took 35 threes. Each star player made 5 of them. And for Ohio State, it really was just about, you look at, besides E.J. Liddell, who had a really good game, 23 points, 14 rebounds, and Dwayne Washington, who had a double-double, 18 and 10, they didn't get much from their other players. I mean, Walker off the bench had 12. Other than that, nothing else doing for Ohio State. And this was a team that I liked coming out of the South region. I thought, you looked at their team, they had just come off the Big Ten semifinal win over Michigan, played Illinois tough in the Big Ten championship. And what we saw from Ohio State, we'll get into our next upset, is that things can happen. You can have a bad night. Ohio State was 5 for 23 from beyond the arc. And despite out-rebounding Oral Roberts by 17, lost the game. Got to give the Eagles a lot of credit. Now they're going to take on Florida. And Florida had a little bit of a rough game from Trey Mann at the guard position. It was a really entertaining game between Florida and Virginia Tech. The Gators missed some free throws that could have won it in regulation. Virginia Tech tied it. Gators, though, won in overtime. But Ohio State out. And by the way, for those who sent E.J. Liddell death threats and messages on Instagram, get a life. The shame to do that, period, and then you hide behind your social media account. Those players, nobody deserves that. Kid played his heart out. It's just ridiculous. And I love what Charles Barkley said on the post game on Friday night. That's why he's not on social media. You don't want to deal with people like that. Just awful. And I'm glad E.J. Liddell shared that, because it brings some of these people to light. Hopefully Ohio State can, with the help of the police, can help figure out who did that, because there's no place for it whatsoever. And then the other big higher seed, because North Texas did beat Purdue in overtime. That was a good win for the Mean Green. Purdue was projected to make a run, at least to the Sweet 16. But the other loss that really hurt my bracket came in the end of Saturday night. We go to the 3 seed in the East region, Texas, who plays Abilene Christian. And Abilene Christian had a good season, 24-4. Texas loses 53-52. Now, this is how Texas lost the game, for those who didn't watch the game. The Longhorns had 60 possessions in the game. They turned it over 23 times. Over a third of the time you touched the ball, you gave it right back. You still almost had a chance to win this game. Abilene Christian as a team shoots 20, almost 30%. 20 for 67. 3 for 18 from downtown. One of their starting guards goes 1 for 10 shooting. Their starters make 1-3 combined. And Texas has the lead up 1 Despite trailing by four with 2 minutes to go, Texas rallies to take the lead. Abilene Christian gets the final possession. Misses the shot. Good block by Texas down low. And Pleasant gets fouled. Now, you could argue that that call should not have been made because you've seen throughout the last 2 minutes there's blood on the court and they're playing very physical. But Matt Coleman did foul. You see on the putback, Coleman kind of gets to his wrist. That's a foul. You've got to call that. I know people say you got to swallow the whistle, let him play. That's got to get called. And give Pleasant credit, who's not a good free throw shooter. He had a good poise in his, got a good poise, settled it down, didn't let the nerves get to him, and made both free throws easily. In that kind of pressure, that's how you win games. And Abilene Christian was 10 for 12 from the free throw line. That's how you win. Free throws mean everything in March. I always tend to try to pick teams that, if I'm not sure, I kind of look to free throw percentage, because when most games are close in March, that's usually how you win. Or in some cases, how you lose. And we talked with the Texas student reporter, Stephen Wagner from the Daily Texan on the show, in the Bracket Palooza special. And one of the questions I asked was, is Shaka Smart on the hot seat at Texas? Because they keep losing first round games and they lose in epic fashion. This is an epic loss. Losing Northern Iowa on that last second shot a couple years ago is an epic loss. But at some point, Texas has got to advance. This team won the Big 12 championship for the first time and are out. Embarrassing loss for the Longhorns. An embarrassing loss for Shaka Smart, who got the Texas job off of the great run he had at VCU, took the Rams to the Final Four, and Texas hasn't seen really anything from their program after this hire. So that seat that cooled off because Texas was so good in the regular season, it got hotter again. I don't think he'll get fired, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. So I'll try to go through a quick rundown, some of the results that impressed me over the course of this week. I won't go through the one seeds, really. Baylor rolled, Michigan rolled, Gonzaga, Illinois, all four rants with these. I liked what Loyola did against Georgia Tech. Again, Georgia Tech, we didn't get to it on the show, lost Moses Wright due to COVID protocol. That game, if I knew that going in and I changed my bracket, I picked Loyola Chicago because of that. And the Ramblers did a really good job. Lucas Williamson had 21 points. Cameron Crutwig was able to have some good poise down low. The Ramblers had four players in double figures. So give them credit. They're going to go up against Illinois today, 12 noon on CBS. And it's one of the best second-round games in the next couple days. And I'll get into that when I give you my five second-round games I'm looking forward to. Oregon State over Tennessee. I was shocked it was a blowout. But Tennessee didn't have John Fulkerson, who took that elbow in the Florida SEC tournament game. Beavers are playing really well off that Pac-12 tournament title. They'll play Oklahoma State, who had a little bit of a tough time with Liberty for about a half. Cade Cunningham struggled, but the supporting cast kind of picked them up. That was a good win for Oklahoma State. What scared me was the Colgate-Arkansas game early Thursday, because Colgate gets out to a 14-point lead. I'm thinking, man, I should have picked that upset. I thought about picking Colgate, and then Arkansas goes on like a 17-0 run to end the half. Colgate kind of gets some fire in the second half, but Arkansas used their defense to make plays. Justin Smith, the transfer that our Arkansas reporter Andrew Joseph talked about, 29 points, 13 rebounds. Moses Moody only took 8 shots. We'll see if he's more aggressive shooting later today against Texas Tech, who beat Utah State 65-53, so that should be an interesting game. North Carolina loses in the first round. First time Roy Williams has ever lost a first-round tournament game. 85-62, Wisconsin wipes the floor of them, 29 points in Brad Davison. Badgers will play Baylor on Sunday. Oh, no, not Sunday. They'll play later today at 2:40, so that's going to be an interesting game. Shout-out to Rutgers, who advances to the second round in the NCAA tournament for the first time, I believe, since 1983. And this is when Geo Baker, their top scorer, kind of struggling throughout the game, but the Scarlet Knights find a way to win. Ron Harper Jr. had an off-night shooting at 3-for-14, didn't make a 3, but Rutgers still found a way to advance. And the Scarlet Knights will play Houston. I expect that game to be a low-scoring defensive battle. Houston likes a low-scoring game. Rutgers likes a low-scoring game. Big Ten versus American. We'll see how that plays out. Syracuse just red-hot shooting the ball from 3. I think a lot of people thought they'd beat San Diego State. I don't think they thought they'd win like that. Buddy Boeheim was outstanding in this game, was hitting 3s from the logo. 30 points, 7 of 10 shooting from beyond the arc. And Syracuse wins no problem. They get a good, interesting matchup with West Virginia later today. The old matchup of the Big East. And West Virginia not only can play offense, they are a very good defensive team as well. And normally with a Bob Huggins squad, and by the way, congrats to Bob Huggins, gets his 900th win. West Virginia is known more for their defense, but Miles McBride and Buddy Boeheim, if you were looking for a game to watch with great guard play on Sunday, watch this game at 5 o'clock. Because those guys are going to make it really fun. And McBride has guarded some of the top guards in the Big 12. So he can be a really good defensive player as well. But West Virginia gets good scoring all around. I think they've gone under the radar in the Big 12 with Baylor and Oklahoma State and Texas and Kansas. West Virginia's kind of escaped, but Syracuse is always dangerous as that double-digit low seed. So keep that in mind when you watch this game on later today. As far as Saturday schemes, Creighton is able to hold off the Gauchos of Santa Barbara. Not too surprised. Again, I picked Creighton in this game just because everybody was picking UCSB. Creighton will take on Ohio. I think Creighton will win that game, although who knows with Preston for Ohio if he can keep that run going. Bobcats getting a good win. That should be a fun second-round game on Monday. We'll go through the schedule in a little bit. Props to Iona as well. Had the lead in the second half, but Alabama was able to pull away. USC beats Drake after what a great first four, by the way, on Thursday. That we had overtime with UCLA-Michigan State. We had a close Drake-Wichita State game. Norfolk State-Appalachian State came down to the last possession. So that was fun, and they get four games going on at different times. You kind of got that NCAA tournament feel that the first four is always lax, so I really enjoyed that. But USC beats Drake and advances. Maryland over UConn I did not have, but Bookner struggled for the Huskies. Maryland got 23 points from Eric Ayala, one of their top guards, so the Terps advance to play Alabama. Iowa wins by 12 over Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon at least made it competitive, and I get to give props to all these 15 seeds. Dora Roberts wins. And Grand Canyon and Iona kept the games really close. So I got to give them a lot of props. That's not easy to do. Oklahoma without their second leading scorer, Devion Harmon, who is out due to COVID protocol, beats Missouri. And that sets up an interesting matchup with Gonzaga, where if Oklahoma had Harmon, I think this game would be closer. I saw somewhere Gonzaga's favored by 14. Oklahoma's beaten some top 10 teams this year. So I wouldn't count out Lon Kruger's squad making that a game. But UCLA beats BYU, 73-62. Yuzhang for UCLA at 27 points. They got the big win with Michigan State. You love the job Mick Cronin's doing right now. And now they get Abilene Christian for a chance to go to the Sweet 16. Mick Cronin kind of slowly doing what he did in Cincinnati, doing it at a big-time school. Good to see that. Colorado, I was surprised, dominated Georgetown. But they hit 16 threes, 96-73 win. And for Georgetown, good to make the tournament, but it's still a reminder of how much growth Patrick Ewing still has to do to get Georgetown where he wants to be. A team that I picked far in the tournament that I'm kind of concerned about is Florida State. They did beat UNC Greensboro 64-54, but they won the game where they did not make a three-point shot the entire day. Now, they only took nine of them. They didn't make anything. It's very impressive when you win a game when you don't make a three, but it's also concerning. And the Seminoles didn't have that to do because they got out to a really huge lead in the first half. And the Spartans just kept poking away. They got the lead down to three at the break. And for a while, it looked like they might have a shot at the upset. Florida State was able to hang on. But if Colorado can keep that great shooting going from the perimeter, they could win against Florida State on Monday. So that'll be a really interesting game to watch. We already talked about Gonzaga. So we'll run down the schedule. Loyola Chicago against Illinois at noon today on CBS, then 2:40 Wisconsin against Baylor, 5:15 at Syracuse against West Virginia on CBS, 6:10 on TNT, Texas Tech against Arkansas. By the way, Texas Tech is the sixth seed and is favored by a point and a half as of right now. 10 seed Rutgers against 2 seed Houston in the Midwest, 7:10 on CBS, Oral Roberts against Florida, 7:45 on True TV, and then 8:45 North Texas at Villanova. 9:40 Eastern, Oregon State, Oklahoma State, wraps up the day on TBS. So out of today's games, I told you, Syracuse-West Virginia is going to be a great game. The Loyola-Illinois game is going to be fun. Sister Jean did pick the Ramblers to win this game. I don't think they will. We kind of talked about it with Abby Schnabel, who is the reporter from Loyola Chicago, the Loyola Phoenix, a student newspaper. By the way, thank you again to our student reporters. They were fantastic on this show. We're going to try to bring some more back in the week coming when we get to the Sweet 16, Elite 8. Try to do that as well. I'm interested, though, how Kofi Coburn and Illinois can kind of use their size to their advantage. I think this is going to be a bigger team than what Loyola's played against. But you can't count out the Ramblers, and I could see this game being close in the second half. I just think Illinois will pull away. We talk about Syracuse, West Virginia. I like Texas Tech, Arkansas for this reason. And again, it's that old cliche. Who do you take, good defense or good offense? Texas Tech can make a game ugly, but Arkansas, if they get going shooting the ball, it's going to be really tough to beat them. You wonder if Arkansas is kind of shaking off the rust after the slow start they got off to against Colgate. They can't get off to that slow start again the way Texas Tech and Chris Beard's team plays defense. So that'll be a fun game on TNT today. I like Rutgers against Houston. I'm kind of surprised Villanova was only favored by like 5.5 in this game. I was impressed with the Wildcats. Winthrop hung around for a little bit, but Robinson Earl, who is one of the players that shared Big East Player of the Year, really fun player to watch with Jermaine Samuels. So Villanova still has that front court depth. It's really getting that back court. Can they keep developing? Guys like Caleb Daniels, I want to see what he continues to do. So Villanova, Jay Wright, always seems to get them in this position. So I think if you had to pick four games to watch out of the eight, be Loyola, Chicago, Illinois, Syracuse, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Arkansas, and Rutgers in Houston. I'll give you Monday. Noon Eastern will be Oregon against Iowa. 2:40, Oklahoma and Gonzaga. Again, I kind of like this game. I think Oklahoma can hang around. 5:15 on TBS, Abilene Christian against UCLA. 6:10 on TNT, Ohio against Creighton. 7:10 on CBS. This is, again, an interesting game in the East region. LSU, the 8th seed against the top seed, Michigan. I liked what Will Wade did in this game for LSU. They had a couple, one of their top players, Walford, I believe, for LSU, got into foul trouble. Will Wade left him in the game, and LSU was able to finally get the game going at their pace. St. Bonaventure slowed it down, but LSU got into it. And this is going to be an interesting test. Michigan still doesn't have Isaiah Livers. This is their first test in this tournament. Can they get through? I think they will win. But if LSU can get it at their pace, it'll be a really interesting fight here. Keep an eye on Cam Thomas for LSU. He's a really fun player to watch. 7:45 on TBS, Colorado against Florida State. 8:45 on TNT, Maryland against Alabama. And then 9:40 USC against Kansas. So Trojans could win this game. Evan Mobley against David McCormack is going to be a fun matchup in the paint. I kind of like USC, though, to pull that upset. So I'll give you the games I like Monday. Again, Gonzaga, Oklahoma, I think will be entertaining. Colorado, Florida State will be. I like that game. LSU, Michigan, and USC, Kansas. Those will be my four I'd watch Monday. Now, as we wrap up this segment, I got to talk about the bad job the NCAA did this week, and it goes back to the women's tournament, which starts on Sunday. But that's not the story here. The story is the bad job that the NCAA did this week, where the NCAA Women's Tournament is down in San Antonio. They have their own bubble. And it's the conditions, the amenities they gave the women. You look at all the pictures they've been sharing on social media and the videos, and props to those women for sharing that so they can expose the NCAA. You look at all the stuff the men get and the women got for their weight room, yoga mats and some barbells. You saw pictures of like the men getting buffets, the women got something that looked like a TV dinner. Now, the NCAA Vice President of Women's Basketball, Lynn Holzman, talked on Saturday that everything was fixed and that they kind of improved the weight training facility, improved the practice courts. Because before it was going to be, they didn't say, like, told you, oh, the Sweet 16, we're going to change it and it's going to be better. Why couldn't you have it for the players now? Why did it take till people were outraged on social media for you to change something? We get it. The men's tournament brings in more than the women's tournament. And I liked what a lot of the women's coaches said, like Muffet McGraw from Notre Dame, or the Stanford head coach. I don't want to get her name wrong. We're saying that when you talk about March Madness, you talk about the men's tournament. The women's tournament's just as good. It's not what the men's tournament is, but those student athletes deserve the best, especially this year. Why is there not the same amenities for them that the men get? Why do we keep having this discussion? There shouldn't be a discussion. It's ridiculous. Just the NCAA just always gets things wrong. You couldn't even give them the same gift bag. Come on. It's just such a shame. It really is. Because, again, we talked, those student athletes deserve the best this year. And the fact that it took players sharing how bad it is for you to change things, it's a joke. Absolute joke. Glad it's fixed, but way to be reactionary. This shouldn't even have been an issue. By the way, I would watch the women's tournament. It's not just UConn this year. There are a lot of good teams in that field. So on next week's show, we're going to be doing a little more. We'll get you updated. We may do one comes out maybe before the Sweet 16. We'll try to get you some student reporters on for that show as well. Probably talk to the Iowa student reporter next week as well. We didn't get a chance to talk to Iowa for the preview, but we'll get to do that. Again, thank you to all the student reporters. Thanks to all who tuned in for Bracket Palooza. It was so much fun. So one more segment coming up. We'll do a little basketball with the LeBron James injury and just go a little bit around each sport and try to get you the latest on everything. One more time, you're listening to Kicking with Keeler here on Full Press Radio, and we'll have our final segment after this. One more segment here on Kicking with Keeler this week, wrapping up the week that was in the world of sports, and we have to talk about the big injury that happened on Saturday. The Hawks are playing the Lakers. The Lakers lost the game, but that's not the big story. LeBron James leaving the game with 10:50 left in the second quarter. Solomon Hill for the Hawks ends up, in this case, getting into LeBron James a little bit, collide with LeBron's ankle. LeBron gets knocked over, has to get an MRI, and it's revealed that he has a high ankle sprain and is out indefinitely. It's a big loss. Big loss for Lakers, who right now, again, are playing without Anthony Davis. And LeBron tweeted after the game, "Nothing angers and saddens me more than not being available to and for my teammates. I'm hurt inside and out right now. The road back from recovery begins now. Back soon like I never left. Hashtag the kid from Akron." Now, this does hurt LeBron's MVP hopes. I still think right now, if you're looking at MVP, although he's out right now, I still think the MVP of the league is Joel Embiid. But does this hurt the Lakers going forward? My answer is no. It hurts their seeding, yes. Still without Anthony Davis, probably without Anthony Davis for the next 2-3 weeks. At least. He's been out for a little while, too. So the Lakers might have a tougher time winning. It's going to be a lot put on the shoulders of Kyle Kuzma. Trade deadline is Thursday. We'll see if the Lakers make any moves or players get bought out. They could still add some pieces there. That's always possible. They did add Montrezl Harrell this offseason. He'll have to play more of an impact than a Schroeder. Lakers still have talent. They're still going to be a decent team. They're not going to be what they were. But this doesn't mean they're not going to win an NBA championship. Right now, they're the 3 seed in the West. They're 2.5 behind the Jazz. Percentage points behind the Suns for the 2 seed. And they play Phoenix a couple more times in the regular season. Regular season ends May 16th, by the way. A high ankle sprain is an injury that can linger, yes. That you have to worry about. But if you're the Lakers, you have no reason to rush LeBron James back. You have no reason to even rush Anthony Davis back. Because you don't need home court to win a championship. It helps you. But what another team might have from home court, depending on how many fans are in the building for those games, as we get to the postseason, you kind of make up for that difference because you have the two best players in the court more often than not. And you want them back as healthy as possible. The Lakers are no danger to miss the playoffs. Right now they're 4.5 ahead of the Spurs for that 7th seed, and the Lakers should be fine. As long as they're not in danger of the play-in, you don't rush LeBron and Anthony Davis back by any means. because you need him to. What's the Lakers' goal? To win a championship. It's not to get the best record in the West. It's not anything regular season related. Their season is evaluated by, do they win back-to-back titles? To do that, you need LeBron and Davis healthy. Case closed. So while it's a major injury, and it's going to suck to not watch LeBron James play basketball for a while, it doesn't necessarily mean the Lakers are done in their quest for a title. Another games I was impressed with this week, I liked the Bucks win over the Sixers the other day. Giannis, I thought, stepped up, made some big plays down the stretch, got the victory for them. To give you some top NBA games to watch this week, as we tend to do every week on the show, Lakers-Suns, obviously, first game without LeBron. Be an interesting matchup tonight at 10 o'clock on NBA TV. So as you threw the March Madness, try to maybe flip that game on a little bit, should be fun. Then you have on... nothing really good on Monday. Tuesday, you get Lakers, Pelicans, Nets, Trailblazers. Still no Kevin Durant for the Nets. I know they lost to Orlando a couple days ago, but they've been really good. That should be a fun game. Philly at Golden State should be good. Wednesday, Clippers and Spurs. Nets at Jazz and ESPN. Jazz still the one seed right now in the West at 30-11. Thursday, the TNT game, Sixers, Lakers, Trailblazers at Heat. Miami's playing a little better right now. The Heat at 22-20. Right now they're tied with Atlanta for the four seed. Now they traded away Myers Leonard, who said some basically he was playing a video game and said an anti-Semitic slur, and he's been suspended for a week. So what the Thunder did, they traded Trevor Ariza to the Heat. They get Myers Leonard in a second-round pick in 2027. But essentially, Myers Leonard's not going to play a game for the Thunder. So basically, the Heat did this to get rid of him. I think they kind of did the right thing here. Those words have no reason those words should be said. And I thought Sam Presti did the right thing here. Now, again, the Thunder kind of just seemed to... they got so many picks in the next few years, it's insane. But he's never going to play again. At least for the Thunder. But hopefully that Myers Leonard's learned from those mistakes. We didn't really haven't had a chance to get into that over the last week, but I wanted to touch on that real quick. Friday's games. You have... by the way, the Rockets are still really bad. Rockets, Timberwolves, if you like really bad basketball, that game. Celtics and Bucks are the Friday game on ESPN at 7:30. And then Saturday, Philly at the Clippers on NBA TV. That should be a good game at 10 o'clock. So you do have some good games in the NBA this week. Baseball, I said, still less than 10 days away from opening day. If you're looking for a cool story in college baseball, watch Vanderbilt when you can. Jack Leiter, who is the son of Al Leiter, threw a 16-strikeout no-hitter against South Carolina. And this is a Vanderbilt rotation that is led by Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter. Both are going to be top five picks in this year's draft. So that is something to always keep an eye on. Nothing really huge, I think, in the world of baseball. I haven't had a big injury, luckily, that's really affected anything. And again, as we get into this next week, you'll get my predictions and I'll go through the season, what I think will happen. I don't think there's many surprises, I think, in baseball this year. I think it's somewhat predictable, but we'll see if the season can change anything. Last thing I want to get into, at least for sports this week, coming off of the Players' Championship last week, I was very impressed with Justin Thomas, who ends up getting the win. It's been a tough season for him, going through the passing of his grandfather, had a rough start to the year, and I liked how he played at the Players, where he had a rough first couple of rounds. And it looked like he was going to have another bad week and was kind of just going through things. And then the weekend, he just got hot and took over. Ends up winning by one shot over Lee Westwood. And it just is still a reminder of how great of a golfer he is. and why I would put him up with anybody in the Masters. Shot a 64 on Saturday, then a 68 last Sunday to win by one over Lee Westwood, two over Bryson DeChambeau. It was still a great tournament to watch. And as you get closer to the Masters, again, the Masters are only a couple of weeks away. It's amazing how much the events just keep constantly coming up in the sports calendar. That every few weeks you get a big event in sports, the Masters are right there. And luckily Tiger Woods keeps doing better. That's a great sign. And hopefully we see him real soon. But there's still some great golfers to watch, and these great tournaments are still events you want to watch to see you win, especially the Masters. And Justin Thomas got to be right up there with anybody to win that green jacket, and if he does, it'll be his second major, and he's already won a PGA championship. We'll put him halfway through having all four majors. We talk about Jordan Spieth, who's also playing better, but Justin Thomas, I think, is going to be a name you want to watch. That's obvious, but he kind of kept that, still showing he's one of the best, with a great weekend at the Players, where after shooting one under the first couple of rounds, ends up winning the tournament. That's the kind of run he can get on any given day. So thank you all for tuning in this week. Really enjoying the basketball. Again, we'll have more of it next week. We'll break down the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. We'll give you my picks on who I think will go to the Final Four then. Maybe I'll actually get some picks right. Again, I ran through a lot of bad luck. I'm not blaming anybody, but I could have been 25-7 if not for those two games. Like, the things I'm in for fun, I'm like number one or number, like top five in them, and my bracket can't get a lot of points because my two Final Four teams are out. My alternate one, which I did, I'll give you my backup Final Four, was Iowa, because I wanted to pick somebody other than Gonzaga. It was Iowa, Michigan, Illinois, and Baylor. And Michigan, Illinois beating Michigan in the championship. That's the other Final Four. I won't brag about that one because, again, that's my backup bracket, but just wanted to give you that one as well. We'll have that one. Probably do baseball predictions next week with the season beginning a week from Thursday. We'll talk more about the NBA. We'll do some NHL and all the world of sports as well. So again, want to remind you, follow me on Twitter at @RickNader555. Follow us on Twitter at @FP_coverage, at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or get your podcast. Just search for Kicking with Keeler and it is there. Please give us a rating. Tell us what you like. What you don't like, you can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. And remember, download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. All of our articles, podcasts, live shows, everything is there. Be sure to check that out. And we're also on Sportscaster. Go to fullpresscoverage.com/sportscaster. You get our live video shows. Sometimes we do on there as well. Be sure to check out my work over at Pinstripe Prospects. We do the Pinstripe Prospects Chasing 28 podcast every week. That comes up on later this week. We will have a show. The Yankees unveiled their minor league coaching staffs for the season at the four major affiliates. We're going to do a breakdown of those coaches. A lot of new faces in the Yankees organization. That should be a fun show. I think my assistant editor, Matt Cardos, will join me for that. We'll have some fun. And then check out my work at Barrett Sports Media. This week I wrote about Shaq and Candace Parker's discussion, why Candace Parker doesn't hold any anger towards Shaq, even though Shaq suggested, maybe they said some people think the women should lower the rims. And Candace Parker said, if I have another daughter, she'll dunk. So Candace Parker really is really fun to watch when she does games for TNT as an analyst. She's really good at it. And I did a piece on Jay Williams' comments, how embarrassed he was at how the NCAA treated the women in the bubble, like we talked about earlier. So be sure to check out those pieces. Again, thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Be our last show in March, believe it or not. Calendar comes around really fast. And we'll get a chance to talk more madness. So thanks for all tuning in. Please stay safe. Enjoy the basketball. And I'll see you back here sometime around Friday, Saturday next week. For the breakdown of the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. Until then, thanks for kicking with me, Ricky Keeler, and I'll see you next time.